The hour 10:15, Hammond Rider, call the House Tax Committee to order. When we have a quorum, we'll start out with the House File 1249. We have Chairman Hoppe with us today. And is the A1 amendment yours, Chair Hoppe?
Mr. Chair, I don't have it in front of me, but I will be happy to offer the A1 amendment.
Okay, so what I'll do, members, when we have a quorum, we will hear the bill. When we have a quorum, I will move the House File 1249, then I'll move the A1 amendment, and then this would be laid over for possible inclusion in and out of his tax bill. So with that, please present your bill, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. We appreciate your time, and I know we're first up on a busy calendar, so we will be brief. I got involved in the historic tax credit issue 5 or 6 years ago, and this is a continuation of that. We're looking for a total of $42 million, $7 million a year for the next few years in an effort to try to work on low-income housing projects, and we're hoping to be included in your omnibus tax bill, which I'm sure whenever I hear the theme song, I will completely agree with. And with that, Mr. Chair, I will turn it over to the expert testifiers, and we will start out with Mr. Shuffel.
Okay. And before we do that, is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify on behalf of Chairman Hoppe's bill as amended, as it will be amended? Anyone with concerns thereof? Does the department wish to testify?
Not at this time.
Okay, thank you, sir. Okay, so please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Mark Shuffel. I'm with the firm Advantage Capital Partners, and it's great to be with you today. I thank you to Representative Hoppe for bringing House File 1249. We're certainly here in support of that. If you understand the hours, I will be brief as well. I can relate somewhat to what you're doing. I come to you as a recovering politician from Colorado. I'm the outgoing Senate Majority Leader from Colorado who has found life after elected office. So here is...
Is there life after office?
There is, Mr. Chair.
Oh, I don't want to know why.
Term limits caught up with me in Colorado, and so I'm gainfully employed in the private sector now. But very excited about the opportunity that you're taking on here with low-income housing tax credits. Actually, your bill is very similar to one we passed in Colorado. You all know the environment of housing and the shortage as it relates to senior communities and workforce communities, and we would all love a world where market forces operated properly and there was sufficient investment to provide low-income and reduced rental housing. The reality is the world doesn't work that way, and so programs like the federal government has put in since the early 80s, this is your opportunity to continue to capitalize on that and provide the leverage that fosters an investment to do that sort of housing subsidy here in Minnesota. My firm that I'm with now is one of the firms that puts together the financing and puts the deals together with the various groups. You've got some folks on the building side that will testify next. But bottom line, it's a very good bill, and appreciate your support and privilege to be with you today. Thank you.
Thank you. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Okay.
And we'll go to member questions.
Mark Shuffel with Advantage Capital.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, Jamie Thielen. I'm president and CEO of the Sand Companies. Been in business for about 25 years, been doing housing for over 20 years. Our main office is in Wake Park, and we also have a downtown St. Paul office. We've done about nearly 30 projects similar to what's proposed that would fund, these credits would fund. I want to talk a little bit about just the demand that we're seeing out there. I mean, you read about all the different statistics out there, affordable housing, the needs, and I just wanted to put light on a couple specific projects. We just completed a 37-unit veterans housing project on the St. Cloud VA campus just in October this past year, and within less than 45 days, we're 100% occupied. There's a huge demand out there. We have a building under construction right now in Wright County, Greater Minnesota. 49 units. They're basically framing up on the third floor right now, and there's 250 people on the waiting list. That's the kind of real numbers that we're seeing out there. And as it becomes more and more challenging to fund some of these projects, this is a really great funding source that the state can utilize. We've worked with the state historic credit program, which is kind of mirrors off of. It's really been a successful program. We think that this would be a really nice added feature for additional funding.
Thank you. Questions from members to the witnesses?
Yes, sir.
Vice Chair McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for the witness. What counties did you just say in your testimony that you were working in?
Mr. Keelan.
Yes, Mr. Chair, committee member. Stearns County is the St. Cloud project, and Wright County, St. Michael, is the project that's under construction right now.
Vice Chair McDonald.
Very good. Thank you.
Any other questions? Of the Chair Hoppe, we'll wrap it up.
Mr. Chair, members, we appreciate the ability to be first. We hope we were brief enough. Please contact me if anybody has any questions after this. And we would, I think this is important and needed across the state, and we would like to be included in your omnibus tax bill.
Thank you. With that, we'll do the procedural issues when we have a quorum. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Item next, let's go to House File 924. Chair Anderson S. has a bill. Okay, Chair Anderson S., when we have a quorum, we will be moving House File 924. And then, Chair Anderson S., is the A2 amendment yours?
It is, Mr. Chair.
Okay, so then we will get the bill in shape the author would like. Please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What this does is it gives the City of Plymouth the revenue that would be from the exemption of sales and use tax, a tool that has been used by local units of government across the state of Minnesota many times over, from county jails to libraries to facilities such as this. And the City of Plymouth has been for some time trying to make repairs to their Plymouth Ice Center that they have in town. They are being forced to do some of these things because of some federal requirements on the refrigerant coolant issue. And so they've had to make some adjustments to that, as well as some energy issues, too, that are federally required. And this would help them to fund those requirements that have been placed on them by the federal government. And that's it. In a nutshell, I do have City Councilmember Jeff Washi here to speak to the city's financial concerns. And if, Mr. Chair, if you want to have him speak.
Oh, absolutely.
Right.
And Chair Anderson, thank you so much for all your work on this. This is for bringing this forward. Okay, so let's go to the witness. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Yes, my name is Jeff Washi, and I'm from the City of Plymouth. I serve on the Plymouth City Council, and also I'm the Deputy Mayor of the City this year.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you. I'd like to begin just by talking a little bit about our ice center, Plymouth Ice Center. We consider it very much a regional asset. It was built in 1997 and is a 120,000-square-foot facility that contains three sheets of ice. The venue has seating for 1,700 visitors and contains meeting rooms, locker rooms, and concession space. The rinks are used for hockey, figure skating, speed skating, open skating. We have a fiscally sound operation with the day-to-day operations require no support from our tax levy. The ice rink pays for itself. Plymouth Ice Center is preparing to give an idea just kind of the regional aspect of it. Plymouth Ice Center is preparing to host two national tournaments in the next 18 months, the National Sled Hockey Tournament and the USA Boys National High School Tournament. Plymouth Ice Center is Minnesota's second largest community-based ice center in the state, one of the busiest arenas in the state, also drawing more than 500,000 visitors annually. We have skaters from 50 of the state's 87 counties have used the facility, as well as people from visiting from North Dakota, South Dakota, Wisconsin, and Canada. We host more than 20 local, regional, and statewide tournaments, serving more than 400 teams per year. And we're the home ice to one of the nation's top two largest hockey associations, serving more than 1,000 children in the ages of 6 to 18. That kind of gives you an idea of the magnitude of the ice center and how much it's utilized outside the city of Plymouth. As Representative Anderson did state, we do have currently preparing to begin federally mandated improvements to our system. The total project we're looking at this point is about a $5 million project, but specifically the federally mandated improvements are refrigerant conversion for a little under $1.4 million, the HVAC system for $80,000, roof air exchange for $30,000, energy system is $30,000, and again, dehumidifier is $30,000, and the roof is a little under $1.4 million. So those are some of the issues that we're dealing with from the federal mandated roof ceiling system, and that concludes my comments. I'd be open if there's any questions.
Thank you very much. Ms. Dalton, could you provide examples of the state having done something like this before? I mean, we've done this before.
Mr. Chair, we've actually done this several times, sometimes generically across the state, such as the jails, sometimes for individual projects like the Earl Brown Center, the St. Paul Saints Stadium, the Walker Arts Center for their parking. So we've done a lot of different ones like this.
Right, so this is okay. Yeah, and my office, as members know, is right next to Chair Anderson's, and I really want to thank you for working so hard on this issue. Sure. Questions? Chair Carlson.
Yeah. Chairman, I'm interested in this issue as well. I represent about 10,000 people in Plymouth as well. So the ICE Center has been a major concern, and as you just heard, it is a major regional draw, and it's quite important to all of our communities in the northwest suburbs. I would like to ask, though, I'm looking at the fiscal note, and it looks like in 2018 it would draw about $1.5 million in savings the way the bill operates. And you use the number $5 million is what the overall need is if you were to completely repair the ICE Center. So how would the balance be made up? I know this would give, it looks like this gives enough for the federal requirement, but goes beyond that. You mentioned the roof at a little over $1 million, and I won't reiterate all the things that were listed, but where does that leave us then if we're successful with this bill, which appears that it will help, but it doesn't totally solve the problem?
Chair Anderson, yes.
Mr. Chair, as Representative Carlson is familiar, this has been an issue that the city has brought to the Capitol for some time. The ask that the city is making is for $2.5 million. That's what the bill outlines for. They've already committed their own resources as well to provide the other half of it. And then you did remind me, too, I know one of the requests that the city had, and I had didn't do that, is I do need to amend the date on here. We have it at January 1st, 2015, and the city would like that to go to 2013. So if staff can get us probably the proper amendment to make that to 2013, and that will change the fiscal note to meet the goals of this piece of legislation.
Would that be, Ms. Dalton, an amendment to the amendment when we get to it?
Mr. Chair, that would be correct.
Okay.
Line 6, you just delete 2015 and put in 2013.
Okay, so we'll get to that in a second here. I'll officially call the meeting of the House Tax Committee to order. We do have a quorum. Excuse me. Representative Schultz moves the minutes of March 1st, 2017. Any additions or corrections? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Schultz. Okay, now I will, Representative Anderson S. will move.
Mr. Chair,
House File 924, so we have it before us. You still have the floor, Chair Carlson.
Yeah.
But let's get the bill in the shape the author would like, first of all. So Chair Anderson moves the H0924E2 amendment. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Now, to the amendment to the bill as amended. Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, there are actually two things you need to do to the amendment that you just adopted. On line one, on line two, change subdivision to paragraph, and on line six, change 2015 to 2013.
Okay, members, do understand the amendment to the bill as amended? Any discussion? That's what we need, Chair Anderson?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails to the amendment to the bill as amended. Okay. Now we have the bill in the shape the author would like. Chair Carlson.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, where I was headed is then with the fiscal note here and the money that is generated and the city share and so on. Kind of the bottom line question then, does this get it done in terms of what the total need was?
Chair Anderson S.
It obviously helps, but I mean, Chair is Carlson. It going to get it done? That's the question I had.
Chair Anderson S.
Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson, with the amendment, it does.
It does get it done.
Chair Carlson.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Lead Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson, just looking at this, does this exemption apply to the ice arena and whatever facilities are around it, or is it other facilities in the city of Plymouth besides the ice arena?
Chair Anderson S.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Marquardt. It applies to any construction project in the city in order to get the $2.5 million that they're looking for. So that would include the ICE facility itself and any other construction projects that happen in order to get up to the amount of $2.5 million.
Lead Marquardt.
Okay. All right. No, that's fine. So as the gentleman was, Mr. Chair, was talking about the ICE arena, what other types of projects in the city of Plymouth would this apply to? We've heard about the ice arena, but are there what other types of uses?
Mr. Chair.
Chair Anderson S.
Representative Marquardt, it would include road construction projects, things like that. So any of those projects to get to the amount, because the city doesn't do projects like this on a regular basis, so it would apply it to any other construction projects within the city limits in order to get to the $2.5 million amount.
But Chair Anderson S.
Thank you.
Wouldn't the ice arena take up the full 2.5 or not?
They are concerned, Mr. Chair, that it wouldn't. And so to make sure that we're covering our bases, we are including those other things. But it is capped at the amount of $2.5 million, so they can't exceed that amount.
Okay, thank you. Lead Marquardt?
That's all. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, with that, we have the bill as amended. Chair Anderson S., and thank you for your work on this, Chair Anderson. Moves that House File 924 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in the second best omnibus tax bill ever. Okay, item next. We will go to Chair Dabney's bill. Chair Dabney will move House File 306, so it's before the committee. And I see no amendments. Representative Dabney?
No amendments, Mr. Chair.
Okay, so to your bill, sir.
Thank you very much. Good morning, members. Thank you. There is a handout that is coming around. I think Isaac has got that will help to fill out this story. You've heard this bill before, and House File 306 speaks to, under Minnesota law, instructional materials required by schools. Think higher education, not K-12. But instructional materials required by schools and instructors for a student's work on a course of study are to be exempt from sales taxes. One of the ways we try to make higher education a little bit more affordable for Minnesotans. Unfortunately, while this statute has been in place for a number of years, the Department of Revenue has taken the illustrative list in state statute and instead made it exhaustive, essentially levying sales tax and student purchases required on course materials. So what was intended to be, here's kind of what we mean should be tax exempt, they said these are the only items that are tax exempt. If you go to the handout you just received, to the second page, there's some bracketed material in the right-hand column that is from revenue, where you'll see the first word in the second paragraph, examples. Unfortunately, that is not the way the Department of Revenue is enforcing this statute. With me today is a representative, Carrie Johnson-Palava, the director of Centerpoint Massage and Shiatsu School and Clinic, who got caught, and their students got caught in this difference between what the law says and how the department is interpreting it, and it had an impact on the school. So, Mr. Chair, if we could hear from Ms. Palava.
Certainly. And before we do that, is there anyone else in the audience which wishes to testify on behalf of the Dabney bill, Representative Dabney's bill? Anyone with concerns? Department?
I think so. Yeah.
Okay. I think we'll hear from you. Okay, so with that, please state your name for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Carrie Johnson-Palava, and I am owner and director of Centerpoint Massage and Shiatsu School and Clinic in St. Louis Park.
Okay, for the record here, I understand the massage, and it's 9 o'clock every Friday morning in Wyckoff, Minnesota. What's the other thing you said?
Shiatsu.
What is that?
Shiatsu is therapeutic body work that comes to us from Japan. It's based on the same theories as acupuncture without using needles. We use pressure, movement, and massage, but it's based on Asian medicine rather than Western medicine.
Is that good for, like, the feet?
It's good for everything.
Okay, good.
And it doesn't require needles.
I don't like needles very much.
A lot of people don't.
Okay, so with that, please provide your testimony.
Okay, thank you. I am in support of House File 306. During a sales tax audit of my school in December 2012 by the Department of Revenue, we learned that instructional materials meant only textbooks, written manuals, or the electronic equivalent. At this time, this was not clear, as we had been given guidance by the Department of Revenue over the prior years that the students' required equipment and supplies were non-taxable. Our audit ended with years of back sales tax that needed to be paid, and we were unable to collect that, but we did pay it. This brought the definition of instructional materials to my attention. Why are only textbooks, written manuals, or the electronic equivalent non-taxable? Why do my students have to pay sales tax on their required equipment and supplies? It seems like the current tax law has a built-in discrimination against vocational education, and this really concerns me. Vocational education plays a very important role in our state and country. Vocational education teaches skills to students who are very employable after the completion of a program. My massage school is considered vocational education, and we have a 98% placement rate of our graduates, which is very high. Vocational education is not just academics. A student enrolled in a vocational training program gains the skill and knowledge needed for a lifelong career. Vocational programs range from less than a year in length to 2 to 3 years. Students have an opportunity to gain a career with far less tuition and time than a 4-year liberal arts education. We teach skills. In order for students to learn skills, students need to purchase equipment and supplies to be able to practice their skills while they're going through their training program. Our students need to practice 3 to 4 bodywork sessions every week outside the classroom. They're required to purchase a massage table or a shiatsu mat, lotions and linens at the beginning of their education. They cannot practice the skills without the proper equipment. All of the equipment and supplies needed to learn massage and shiatsu are currently taxable. Education is currently under new regulations regarding gainful employment. Schools are being asked to reduce tuition. And yet, our state is profiting from the taxation of the equipment needed to complete a training program. Our students need massage tables and shiatsu mats to practice their skills. The Department of Revenue has said that this is professional equipment and that they will use it in their career, and therefore should be taxable. However, the majority of our students work for an employer, such as Massage Envy, and do not use the equipment in professional practice. It is primarily for their education that they need the equipment. In addition, when students are charged sales tax on required equipment and supplies, they're using federal and state loan and grant funds to pay the Minnesota sales tax. And this increases their cost of attendance. I find this bias in the current interpretation of instructional materials to favor academia and to discriminate against vocational education. Yes, we use textbooks, and those are tax exempt. However, in many vocational training programs, students are required to purchase equipment and supplies because they must practice outside the classroom. they do not simply learn skills from a textbook. Skill development is essential and cannot be done without equipment and supplies and regular outside practice. To my knowledge, every accredited school discloses the required equipment and supplies and the cost of the items prior to a student signing an enrollment agreement. In the state of Minnesota, we're required to publish these costs as well. So why do students currently enrolled in a course of study that trains them for future employment need to pay sales tax on required equipment and supplies? This seems unfair and out of line with Minnesota's intent to support our students and education. It is unfair to the student who chooses vocational education over those who choose an academic education. So I ask you to support House File 306 as submitted. Chairman, thank you. And Representative.
Thank you very much. And before we go to the department, any questions of Ms. Johnson Palava? Thank you very much for your testimony. Very good job. To the department. And please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Paul Cummings, and I'm the Tax Policy Manager at the Minnesota Department of Revenue.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
I fear that if there is not a tax bill this year, we may have to hear this next year for the fourth year.
we enjoy it.
Okay.
That's up to your boss.
Well, I think we all have a part to play here. Mr. Chair.
He's good.
Mr. Cummings, wanted to talk about instructional materials. First, I wanted to say that as the department is trying to look at how to say what is instructional materials and what is not, we really look to the legislature. The legislature, when putting in this bill, when originally drafted, as introduced many, many years ago, and I don't have the bill in front of me, the bill did have art supplies in there, art supplies in the bill. But as bills moved through session and got through conference committee, the legislature decided to take off that section that talked about art supplies. So if we're trying to, as the department is trying to figure out, well, what did the legislature intend as they were passing this, they decided to change that list. So then... When we're trying to think, well, what do? We really went back to look at the tapes. We really went back to look at what was the list that the legislature intended as it moved from to final passage. Mr. Chair, I also wanted to say, as it relates to instructional materials, some of the items that are talked about here that are currently exempt are things that are often bought in college bookstores. But some of the items that are represented within this expansion could be bought at a Home Depot or something. So I think as this bill moves forward, we want to continue to work with Representative Dabney and you, Mr. Chair, to ensure that we have some clarifying language, to ensure that we are talking about a way to have something that is administrable, so a cashier who's receiving an exemption certificate for a sales tax exemption for instructional materials maybe isn't caught off guard. Maybe we can find a way to ensure we're meeting the outcomes that that the testifier had talked about and Representative Dabney had testified to, and ensure it's done in a way that upholds the integrity of our sales tax code. But we look forward to working with you, Mr. Chair, Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Cummings. Any questions for members? I think we understand. Lead Marquardt.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Cummings mentioned this was the fourth year for this bill before the committee, and I'm wondering if bills in the legislature work like the Baseball Hall of Fame Committee, where you're on the ballot for 5 years, and if you're not accepted, then the only way you can get on later on is through the Old Timers Committee. So are bills that way too, like the fifth time they're done for a while? And
well,
Mr. Representative Dabney be back.
And then Lead Marquardt, just so you know, the Old Timers Committee of the Tax Committee is Chair Carlson and myself. So.
That's what I was wondering.
We called Chair Groffel the other day at 13 years a rookie. So with that being said, So to your question, no. We will hear the bills as they come before us as long as we can. Vice Chair McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the author, I see the list of things, items that will be tax exempt. Did you have a bill or in regards to art, a major in photography or graphic arts? Of course, that equipment is expensive, computers, cameras, working tablets, et cetera. That wouldn't be included under your bill because it's not listed. Is that correct?
Chair Dabney?
Mr. Chair, if Representative McDonald, if we go to the bill, we are not intending to limit it. If the good news about this bill and the confusion that currently exists is we can blame the Senate. This provision to exempt sales instructional materials from sales tax was originally a Senate position in 2001. There was a fiscal note, a revenue note, when it originally included art materials. They then in 2002 came back with it and then removed art materials but didn't change the revenue note. So if it is required instructional material for a course of study, so it's not me taking a community education photography class and then going to National Camera and buying myself a nice camera and set of lenses and saying, oh, no, this is exempt from sales tax because I'm taking a community ed course. No, this is for a course of study that leads to some sort of a degree.
Vice Chair McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, then how is this administered? Maybe Mr. Cummings can speak to that. It's a sales tax exemption of the point of purchase, and they have to have they'll have to fill out a form. I forget the form's not an ST-11. I forget the form. Pat Felton would know. ST-3,
Mr. Cummings.
Generally, these are bought within the college themselves. So, and then the person that is at the college bookstore sort of knows which is exempt and which is not exempt. So that is generally how it's done right now. Doing it for more vocational materials are things that maybe aren't typically done at college bookstores or going farther out. So that's sort of the discussion that we wanted to ensure that we're having with Representative Dabney to ensure we have an administrable exemption if this is to move forward.
Vice Chair McDonald.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Cummings. So if this is to move forward, which, of course, I support completely, even for those who are in auto mechanics and other trades, they probably won't purchase those items in a college setting. How is this going to be advertised and promoted so a student will know when they go purchase an item that they will save the sales tax at that point of purchase?
Mr. Chair, I'll take the first swing at it, and then Mr. Cummings can take the second swing at the pitch. I think that's part of the conversation to have with the department going forward. I would imagine if you're in an auto mechanics or similar program, you may not be buying through the college bookstore, but there may be an affiliation the college has with a provider of those materials. And we would work that out. Similarly, Augsburg College in Minneapolis in Representative Omar's district no longer has a college bookstore operated by the college. They have a Barnes & Noble on site. That is their college bookstore. I believe McAllister College here in St. Paul also has a similar relationship with an outside provider to be their college bookstore. Although I'm not as confident of that. So, you know, we would need to work out with the department the exact mechanics of that.
Vice Chair McDonald.
Yeah, thank you. No, just I guess in closing, it seems Representative Dabney, that is probably the best mechanics of it is to the instructor and professor at the universities, at the colleges and tech schools to start there to inform their students. So they have to be fully aware and educated on the issue as well. Thank you.
Well, I'd be buying an Augsburg Eagles baseball cap at a Barnes & Noble.
Mr. Chair, I believe that's correct. Augsburg College is a wonderful resource in the community. I don't own any Augsburg ware. Which would be tax-exempt, of course, because it's clothing.
Fully.
Yeah.
Mr. Cummings.
No. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I need to correct the record. It would be the Augsburg Aggies wear at the... I
my cap hanging in my office has, it says Augie's, but then there's an eagle on it.
Well, an Augie is a baby eagle, but it, but they aren't the full-grown eagles. They are the Augsburg Augies.
Are you calling Augsburg babies?
Well, I'm just trying to be precise, Mr. Chair.
For the record.
For the record, Mr. Chair, they are not the Augsburg Eagles. I think they changed that before they moved the bill on, and I think it's Augsburg Hoggies.
Mr. Chair?
So they would receive it at their bookstore.
Chair Dabney?
I thought immature eagles, as Representative Hertas and I think agree, are eaglets. Eaglet, singular, I guess.
We will have research work on
this. Can we get the DNR?
Yes.
But you are correct, Mr. Chair, that Augsburg does use the eagle as their symbol, but as their Minnesota Public Radio sponsorship repeats, we are called Augies.
Augies.
Is their, I think that's their catchphrase.
This is good to know this.
Yeah.
It's important. Mr. Cummings?
That answer right there was an indication of how much you want this in the omnibus.
Looking better all the time. Okay. Without any commitments, of course. Okay, any other questions for the author or the department? If not, Chair Dabney renews his motion that HF number 306 be laid for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Chair Dabney.
Thank you, Chair
and
Mr.
Cummings. And Ms. Johnson Palava. Did I say that? Palava? Palava? Palava?
Palava.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Item next, I will move House File 882, members, if you have that in your packets. I will also then move the... is the A1 mine?
Yep.
Okay, I will move the A1 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. We now have before us House File 882 as amended. And members, what this bill does is when you have student debt that is forgiven, Minnesota right now, you would be picking that up as income. We want to make it basically so conforms with the feds that it would not be taxable as income for student debt that is forgiven. Did I, Ms. Matt, or who are you? Mr. Williams, did I do that right?
Chair Davids, so the certain discharges of indebtedness on the federal level are taxable both on the federal and state level, but there's certain programs that are not taxable. So this would exempt the pay-as-you-earn program, the revised pay-as-you-earn program, the income contingent repayment program, and the income-based repayment program, loan forgiveness through those programs. They would still be taxable on the federal level, but they would not be taxable on the state level.
Well, I'm glad you're here. Okay, thank you for that. Anyone wish to testify on behalf of House File 882? Anyone with concerns on House File 882 as amended? The department?
Not at this time, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Cummings. Any further discussion? I think it's pretty straightforward. And thank you, Mr. Williams, for describing that. With that, I will move the House File 882 as a member there for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Item next, a little different look. I will move House File 19, members. No amendments. Oh, there is an amendment. Okay, members, I will move House File 19. I will now move the H00192 amendment. What this basically does, it says to get qualified for this, you need to be a Minnesota resident. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Okay, so we have House File 19 as amended. Anyone wish to testify? I have a Kane Fossil and a Hazel Erickson. Is there anyone else who wish to testify for the bill or with concerns? Concerns on the chairman's bill?
No.
Oh, I didn't think so. Oh. Okay. With that, would the department like to testify on the bill? Okay. So, how many folks do we have that wish to testify on behalf of the bill? Three. Okay. Why don't you three come down? We've got three chairs here. We'll take your testimony. And in all seriousness, is there anyone who wishes to testify with concerns? That's the right answer. Okay, very good. So we have House File 19 as amended before us. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
My name is Kane Fussell, and I'm a student at Southwest Minnesota State University.
Mustangs?
Yes.
Okay, please provide your testimony.
Good morning, Chair and committee members. My name is Kane Fussell, and I'm currently a senior with 1 year remaining at the Southwest Minnesota State University. My story starts in my junior year of high school. Growing up in poverty has never been easy. My wonderful single mother just lost her job and was spiraling into a deep depression. So I tried to be a good son, and knowing that my family needed money, I started working close to 30 hours a week to pay our bills. This was not easy for a high school student. Going from school to play practice until 6, speech practice until 6:30, volunteering until 7:30, to work until 1 a.m., and back to do homework until 2 in the morning, finally in bed to wake up at 6 and jazz choir the next morning. I enjoyed being busy, but it was taking its toll, and something had to give. Sadly, the first thing that fell through the cracks was my homework, which made my grades decline. I lost my 4.0 GPA, but even worse, I was losing my ambition. I no longer wanted to do all these activities that I loved doing so much, because I focused on work instead of my schoolwork and extracurricular activities. I continued this hectic schedule all through my senior year of high school in order for my family to continue to pay our bills. Before I left for college, my mother got another job and everything was looking up. I was extremely excited to start at college because it was time for me to do what I was passionate about, helping people. Initially, I didn't quite know what I wanted to do, but I knew that I wanted to help better people's lives. Eventually, I realized I wanted to be a teacher so I could be able to give refuge to the students that have a similar family story as I did, growing up in poverty. Though my family was extremely poor and my family did not have the money needed to pay for college, I thought everything would be fine and scholarships and grants would cover my schooling. Unfortunately, I did not qualify for any assistance. I now have $40,000 in student loan debt. The scariest thing to me now is how am I going to pay all these loans and provide for my family and continue doing what I love, teaching. With over $40,000 in debt, I'm extremely worried about this. I know I want to be in the classroom because I can help my students that are being raised in poverty much like I was, but I need help in repaying these loans. Students going to college and trying to better themselves in their education should not be punished for wanting to succeed. I want to thank you for the opportunity to share my story and to thank you, Chair Davids, and others who are working on proposals this legislative session that will help students like me. Gandhi once said, "You must be the change that you wish to see in the world." So here I am, trying to be that change, trying to make a difference that will not only help me, but for many others like me. Thank you. If anyone has questions, feel free to ask, or we can talk after the committee meeting. Thanks.
Thank you for your testimony, sir. Any questions for the witness? Vice Chair McDonald.
Yeah, thank you to the witness. Thank you for your hard work in school and taking the time to advance and lift your life out of poverty and have a successful life. But something you said, something about should not be punished for seeking a higher education. How are you being punished?
To the witness?
To the witness. He said that. I just was curious.
Can I reread what I stated?
Sure.
Please, thank you. I stated students going to college and trying to better themselves in their education should not be punished for wanting to succeed.
I'm just curious, what do you mean should not be punished?
What I mean is that currently, even though my expected family contribution was zero for my FAFSA, I still have $40,000 in student loans, even though I had a 3.97 GPA in high school.
Vice Chair McDonald.
Well, I support the bill. I think it's a great bill. I don't really understand why you would say that those who sought a higher education are being punished because they're in debt. I don't get that rationale myself, but that's all right.
Okay. We will go. Any other questions for this witness? If not, we will go to Ms. Hazel Erickson. Is that correct?
Yep. Good morning, Chair.
Before we do that, your testimony is extremely important, but we do have to clear up a serious matter here. The Augsburg nickname is the Auggies, but their mascot is the Eagle. So everybody's right. Yes. Okay. Ms. Erickson, two. House File 19 as amended.
Good morning, Chair, committee members. I'm a legislative intern at Minnesota Public Interest Research Group, or MPIRG, and a student at the University of St. Thomas. MPIRG is a nonprofit, nonpartisan, student-directed organization that empowers and trains students and engages the community to take collective action in the public interest throughout the state of Minnesota. I'm here today because, unlike a vast majority of students, I'll graduate with no debt because of a generous scholarship. It is because of my lucky break I have the time to speak to you today. And because of this break, I feel a deep obligation to speak out for many friends, relatives, and classmates who are terribly burdened by excessive amounts of student debt upon attending and graduating from college. As if attending classes full-time wasn't tough enough, many of my friends take up jobs as well to help cover costs and student loans. Every day, I have to watch my best friend run herself ragged, hustling from class to work, then to her internship. She currently holds 3 work-study jobs through the University of St. Thomas and an internship which she needs as a resume builder. She still is finishing each year with roughly $15,000 in loans and will have accumulated over $60,000 by the time she graduates. I'm sick and tired of seeing her and many of my other friends, loved ones, and classmates struggle like this. Graduation should be looked at in excitement, not fear. Policies such as the student loan tax credit will not only allow students to get the most out of their college education, but it will also allow them to reinvest in Minnesota when they graduate. These tax credits, if substantial enough, will allow the students the room to breathe while they first starting in their lives after graduation. It will allow them to purchase cars and homes and begin to play a part in the economy that first invested in them. And most importantly, it would encourage intelligent, innovative, and passionate young people like my friend to stay and make these investments in Minnesota when they graduate. Committee members, please invest in students and policies like House File 19, and we will return, invest in Minnesota, and build our lives here. Thank you for allowing me to speak today.
Well, thank you very much, Ms. Erickson. You said St. Ben's?
St. Thomas.
Ooh, Tommy's. St. Ben's, aren't they like the Bennies?
Yeah.
But what's their team name, actually?
I don't know. I can't tell you.
You'd say, who cares?
I'm not a fan of the Bennies.
Blazers. They're actually the Blazers. Yeah. Okay. Oh, it'd be kind of tough. Yeah, okay. Where'd you go?
He looks St. Ben's.
Oh, nasty. Okay, there we go. Okay, thank you very much. Very good testimony. Any questions for this witness? Okay, let's go to our final testifier that supports the bill, Ian Cantonen.
Okay.
Why are you here? Oh, you're observing? Okay, you can observe all you'd like. Doesn't anybody else want to testify on behalf of this bill? Okay, I guess that's the way it goes. Any questions from members? Representative Applebaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the testifiers. This is an issue that's been very important to me. I put forth many bills like this, came up with the concept in my first term last year, so I thank Representative Davis. You know, imitation is the highest form of flattery, so I'm glad we're seeing a version of what I originally proposed. And just a couple questions for the author. One, would you be willing to bump up the limit from 1,000 to, I originally proposed 5,000, but even 2,000 so we can help more people? And I know you share my concern in making sure that students won't be precluded from investing in themselves and staying in Minnesota to continue their education and ultimately start businesses, families, and grow their lives here. So can we make this a bigger, better, beefier tax credit? Would you be okay with that?
Well, thank you for the question. First of all, to set the record straight, this idea that I put in bill form 2 years ago or last year, if you look at the bill numbers, mine was actually a lower number, just for the record. Yes, I would.
False.
I would. Wasn't mine lower? I think mine was the original bill.
No. Doesn't matter.
James, which bill was first? Just we you know, Eagles, Augies, Bennies, we got to get this right.
Mr. Chair, I'm not certain which bill was first. I have to be
Can you please answer? Can you please research that for me? I want to be accurate on that because the statement's been made that I'm a Johnny come lately. I don't think that's the case.
Mr. Chair, my understanding is that there were several different versions of this introduced last year, so I'd have to take a look at sort of when different versions were introduced.
And we will, because I want to be accurate on that. And to the Representative Applebaum, to your question, I'm open to discussing numbers. We'll see how the numbers fit into the omnibus tax bill. And this, because of what I have here, this is certainly not the final discussion on this. Okay. So we will have further discussions on this.
Another question, if that's okay, Mr.
Chair. Oh, absolutely. Representative Applebaum.
So some of the versions that I had proposed, parents who in many cases are generous enough to assist their student with the payment of student loans pay some of the burden. Under this bill, would parents be eligible to receive a credit? Because it doesn't look like it. I'm just curious.
Thank you, Representative Applebaum. No, they would not on this bill.
Okay, so my last question, based on the answer to your first one, is the answer is going to be no, but I was wondering if you wouldn't mind titling this the Applebaum Student Loan Debt Tax Credit.
Well, we don't name bills.
Well, you can do anything you want. You're the chair.
Well, that's correct, but it certainly would not be named that. any other questions? No. Okay, thank you, Representative Applebaum, and we will work on this together. We do need to see what we can do to help reduce student debt. And I believe the first iteration of this was House File 840, the Don't Stop, Believe in Tax Bill in 2015, I think is where this first showed up. And I'll stand corrected if I'm not saying that accurately, but I have stopped believing. So with that, Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this has been an interesting discussion, but I think oftentimes we get focused on Band-Aids and what is the real issue, the uncontrolled increase in the cost of getting a higher education. And, you know, I listened to the testimony here, and I was kind of reflecting on my own experience in terms of going to college, and I was a married college student, and I borrowed student loans. And I think when I finished, I was right around $12,000 or $13,000 of college debt, and adjusted for inflation, that would be equivalent to about $96,000 today, because everything's about eight times more expensive. But I looked at the amortization schedule of $40,000 to repay $40,000 of debt over 15 years. If you financed it at 5%, is $288 a month. So, you know, I guess the question is, you know, is that out of line? Is that an unmanageable amount of debt or investment in yourself to provide you with a higher income? Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Representative Hertaus. And just for members, so we know that the revenue notice is from last year, so we don't have an updated one, so I just wanted to point that out. This is from last year. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe interest rates on student loans are much higher than 5%. 8 to 12% is what Mr. Michaels is noting. Well, it depends on if you're getting it from a Sallie Mae or a private loan, so it depends on the originator loan.
I think they would vary widely.
Mr. Chair.
They do vary widely.
Representative Hertaus.
Representative Schultz, that's why you should do business in the private sector instead of with government. You can go to a bank and get a bank loan for 5 or 6%.
Not if you don't have any assets to get the loan, if you are an independent student.
Okay. Any other questions? Chair Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. An interesting bill, and thank you, testifiers. I couldn't help but listening to the testimony. I think we can all reflect on our own experiences. I know I went through college similar to Representative Hertaus, ended up with a sizable loan that took me a while to pay off. But I also worked throughout college, and I think that was a good experience in that. I don't know, I heard the testimony, and it almost sounded like, you know, the gal working jobs was a bad thing. And I think actually the character that I and a lot of people that I know of that have gone through college, gained from going through college and working at the same time, is a positive thing. And I think we need to reinforce work rather than looking at policy that actually detracts from it. So the question I guess I would have, and maybe I don't know if either of the testifiers want to comment on this, but would the passage of this bill actually diminish the capacity or the propensity of people who are going to college to work?
Comment on that? Or?
Okay. I would like to say really quickly that she works three jobs, and I'm not saying that college students shouldn't have jobs or not work in college, but that it at times is incredibly draining and hard on people, especially if they don't have financial means to only work a single or even two jobs. So that is all.
Chair Drazkowski.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, the number of jobs, whether you're working one or ten, there's only so many hours in the day. Three jobs sounds like an enormous amount of work. Obviously, those aren't three full-time jobs. I know the full-time job that I did with Elk Pay going to college was working on a farm, and many times we'd get done at midnight, and then you'd get supper. And I was character building. And the world did not come to an end, and I had the ability to get up at 5 in the morning, milk cows, and then go to school. And I know others have, too. So sometimes we have to look at work, I think, as a positive thing rather than a negative thing. And so I guess the discussion, I just thought it would be important for us to think about if we're going to go forward with something like this, obviously that helps students, which is a good thing. We definitely don't want it to incidentally end up diminishing work, because I think that's very important.
Okay. And I want members to know that I had three jobs. I got fired from the first two. Okay. So with that, I have on my list Chair Anderson S., Chair Carlson, anyone else? Applebaum, or some Applebaum? Chair Anderson S.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I apologize. I didn't catch your name, Ms.
Erickson.
Ms. Erickson. I think that you said that you belong to MPIRG.
Yep.
Does MPIRG still charge students a fee up front? You have to opt out. It's automatically you have to pay the fee at all.
Ms. Erickson?
Yes.
Okay. And what is your student
Chair
fees
Anderson
that, S. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. What are your student fees that you pay?
Well, I'm a legislative intern here, so I'm not technically a member yet, but I just work through.
No.
Chair Anderson.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Erickson, so I know if you, like when I went to the University of Minnesota Duluth, you had your student fee, and that covered everything from the MPIRG fee that they charge and any other, there was like a tax, if you will, on the fees that you pay just to be a student. There was like a healthcare fee, there was a computer fee, and it was all wrapped into one student fee. Do you remember how much that is for you or was for you when you were a student?
Oh, yes, I understand. I do not remember.
Okay.
Chair Anderson.
Mr. Chair, I just think this was an issue that I worked on a couple of years ago, and I noticed in your bill that you have tuition, but we might, if you're interested, maybe expand that to the student fee as well. Those fees have been increasing quite a bit, at least I know in the public side of things, and it's kind of a backdoor way of grabbing fees from college students. So that's just my thoughts. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair Anderson S. And, you know, House File 19 is certainly open for further discussion as we put the tax bill together. Chair Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, the discussion kind of goes to the core of how we fund higher education, and I no longer serve on that funding division, but I chaired it probably for a dozen years or more, and served on it, I think, probably for about 25 years. Things have changed immensely. You know, when I look around those of us at the table here with perhaps one or two exceptions, when we attended a college or a university in the public sector, if you went to a public institution, the state covered 66% of the cost of attendance. That's still in statute. And the student was to cover one-third of the cost. And as a result of state budgetary problems and what have you, that's pretty well flipped now. It's about 60-40 the last time I looked. So in other words, tuition and fees have literally doubled from the time that most of us in this room attended a college or a university. So that's one thing to keep in mind. When we talk about work, and I remember when I was on that committee, we had a study or a report, I don't think it was one we authorized, but one that we had testimony on. When a student is working, if they work up to about 20 hours a week as a general rule, that's not going to be a negative. But Notice I said up to. That depends probably on the student's major and what kind of workload they have in the classroom and other factors. But clearly that report said that if a student needs to go above 20 hours a week, it's going to be a negative. Now, we did have a comment about somebody that was able to work, I assume, in on a farm that was probably a home environment. But you also have to keep in mind the independent student that's not perhaps got a home that they're living in or commuting or something like that, and they're paying all the costs. So I think you have to keep that in mind, although for some of them they may qualify for financial aid. But I just thought I would point that out. And if they're working over 20 hours a week, not only are they diminishing returns, but the other thing that sometimes happens, and during my time on that committee, when I was in college or at a university, we talked about a four-year degree. While I was on that committee, pretty soon the president of the University of Minnesota at the time and the chancellor of the state university system, it was before Minsky was created, they would come in and talk about it's now taking, because of dropped loads due to cost, in many instances, 5 years to get a four-year degree. And then pretty soon they were talking about 6 years to get a four-year degree. And those have costs to the taxpayer in the state of Minnesota as well, when the students, due to necessity, have to stretch out the number of years that it takes to get a four-year degree. So it's a complex area, and I think anything that we can do to help students meet some of the what I'll call new requirements, new demands as a result of state appropriations not keeping up is a good thing, because I think one of the strengths of the state of Minnesota is that we have had, and it's important that we maintain, a high-quality workforce. And I think a bill like this helps in that regard by helping students. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Applebaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to go back to the number discrepancy earlier, I looked it up, and my original bill was House File 1716, which was introduced March 10th, 2015, revisor number 153314. Your bill was House File 2084, introduced March 23rd, 2015, revisor number 153981. And just wanted to...
Obama, I believe those were different bills. They weren't the same bills.
We were talking about which one was first.
But they weren't the same bills.
Pretty close to being the
so
same, sir.
Both be first.
Regardless of...
You're not going to win on this one.
I'd like to... I'm about to throw an olive branch here. So, regardless of who was first, this is a very good idea, and I would really appreciate to sign on to this bill and look forward to working with you to ensure that it is as good as possible, can help as many people as possible, and make sure that students can continue to be encouraged to invest in themselves here in Minnesota and stay here after they graduate. So I'd like to sign on to your bill.
I really thank you for that. Now, you have some bills out there, too. What are your bill numbers currently this year, 2017.
I don't know what my bill numbers are this year, but I've got a whole bunch of them.
Could you get those to me and then Ms. Windsor, could you get me on those bills?
Thank you.
Okay, let's do that. Okay, other questions? Representative Petersburg, Schultz, then very short from Representative Gruenhagen. I mean, we're running out of time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I know that... I finished my degree in school late in life, so I was 40 or so when I finished. But one of the things that I did realize during that time is we all make decisions on where we decide to go to school. And some of those decisions also impact the cost of that school and the loans that we are willing to accept for it. And so that kind of puts in a little bit of a responsibility on each of us to do that. And we all have... evaluate whether or not that's going to be beneficial in the future or not, because we all want to get a better job. But my question for this is, and maybe for the chair as well, my understanding is that this doesn't distinguish between public schools that are supported by more directly from our taxpayer dollars and those that are private schools, and whether or not that might enable the more private schools to keep their tuition rising faster or not. Am I correct that this is equally stated between all colleges?
President Petersburg, that is correct.
Okay. Thank you. And that's kind of what I thought, too. And so this is a benefit to everybody, but there is a somewhat of a negative in just that it could allow for or enable private schools to continue their larger increases in tuition compared to the public schools that we're trying to keep affordable for everybody. But thank you. This is a great bill, and I appreciate it and support it.
And thank you very much, Representative Petersburg. Did the department, did I go to the department on this? No comment at this time? Okay. Okay, thank you, sir. I've got more people on the list, which we will get to here. Any more questions for the witnesses? They're just kind of sitting up here. Anything else for them? Thank you very much for your testimony. Very good job. You can, don't go away, Matt. Just go away. Okay. So, no, thank you very much. You did a great job. You did a great job. So now let's go to Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to clarify. I had Mr. Williams look up some information, and I looked up some information. Fees vary by collegiate unit, but they can be as low as $200 to $500 a year for fees. And your bill, Mr. Chair, covers any fee, even books, if they're paid with a loan. So those would qualify for your tax credit.
Okay. For the Applebaum David's bill?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. With that, Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, real quickly, I know I've just got a short
bill. Oh, take all the time you'd like.
No, the, you know, it was a few years ago, but I think one thing that would reduce the cost of college, I think we've gone through a period where the number of requirements in a particular major have expanded quite a bit, and I think that we really need to look at, in majors, what the actual required courses are and whether they're really necessary or should they be optional. I think a lot of these majors in college could be completed in 2.5 or 3 years, according to some of the information I've read, and it's kind of bloated. It's kind of like we as reps with our bills, we want all our bills to pass, but there is a vetting problem. I can see in college professors want their course required, but is it really necessary to the accomplishment of the major? Because you hear time and again from students that all the courses I took, half of them weren't really required for the major I was doing. And I think it's time we do a vetting process on that. It might dramatically reduce the cost of college, get it completed quicker, and get people back out into the workforce being productive. Just a thought. Don't want to start an argument. Thank you, Ms. Chair.
Thank you, Mr.
Can I respond?
Thank you, Representative Grunhagen. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Representative Grunhagen. Thank you for that comment. To get accredited to operate, we have to have the students take so many credits, and so they usually never take more than what we require for credits, and they like electives, and so today students have a lot more flexibility in what classes they take, and they have a lot of options for electives. So there's a requirement of how many credits they need to graduate, and that's from the Higher Learning Commission in Minnesota to accredit the university so they can operate.
Representative Schultz, did you use his name?
I did.
Representative
Grunhagen,
first.
I'll talk to you offline.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Grunhagen. Okay. So with that, members, any other questions? Otherwise, I'll wrap up this bill, and we do need to go back to the Hoppe bill. Just to summarize House Bill 19, the David Applebaum bill, it helps Minnesotans with their student loan bill. Okay, that's what it does. Now, it's a great recruitment tool for businesses to attract out-of-state graduates to come to Minnesota. Now, just a little history on this. I think it was about 2 years ago, President Obama had a press conference and said, we are going to try and help students with their debt. And, of course, the old Greg Davids came out and said, I paid for mine, I did it myself, I worked 3 jobs, I did all these things. But then I started to get contacted by various people and some business leaders and so forth who said, this is a great, you're solving a couple things with this. It's a great recruiting tool, and you're helping students out with their debt. So we're getting the best and the brightest coming into the state with their college degrees, and they're getting some help. And so then it's then a kinder, gentler Greg Davids emerged, and it started to make some sense to me. This bill started to make some sense to me. And so, and if you look in the bill, I think Ms. Manzi had done some work on this, but now it's Mr. Williams on this, that it's tailored to help students with greater debt to income ratios. So we're trying to target, so if you have, say, for example, a school teacher or somebody in a profession that's not making maybe as much, they would really benefit from this. And that's the intention here. Get the best and the brightest into Minnesota, and let's rock and roll with it. Representative Carlson? Yeah,
Mr. Chairman, I think what your comments were reinforcing what I was trying to say. And I'll put it this way. Both you and I have gray hair. And you went to a state university, I think, as I did.
I went to the Winona State.
I went to the Mankato State University, the Mavericks. But at any rate, when I first came into the legislature, now I might be a little bit ahead of you in time, but at a state university, it was about 20-some percent, not even the one-third that we put in statute. I'm actually the one that put one-third, two-thirds in statute to try to put a lid on tuition many years ago, and worked with the administration at the time and several communities in higher education that we go with the one-third, two-thirds formula. But probably when you and I were there, it was even lower than the one-third at a state university. And where the 30% came was that the U of M was above 33%. And so the way we handled the appropriations at the time, we brought basically down the University of Minnesota's cost of attendance to the 33%. And yes, the state universities came up a bit to, over time, we phased it in, if I recall correctly, to the one-third, two-thirds. So we kind of had a level playing field, at least in terms of how we talked about the appropriations between the various systems. But there's a real problem for students out there. If you can't pick up an article these days on higher education and without reading about how students are having to rely more and more on student loans, the huge debt, the difficulty of moving into the mainstream because of the student debt, especially if a young man and woman decide to get married and they both have a student debt and that doubles up and they want to do things that young families want to do, organize a household. We hear from the state economists that one of the things that's going slow, and I think student debt may play a role, is organizing more households and what that means, you know, the purchases of homes, refrigerators, stoves, and everything that goes into them. So it does have a drain on the economy when we don't help. But I just wanted to reinforce what you were saying. When I was one that graduated debt-free, I worked some, and I came from a middle-income household where my parents helped. And that made a world of difference. And I would only emphasize that a lot of students don't have that opportunity to get the help that I got from my parents.
Chair Carlson, when you went to Mankato State at the time, what did the credit cost?
Oh, my gosh. I graduated in 1964. So I'm a keeper of things, but I don't think I kept the old fee statements.
That was the year before the Twins were in the World Series. Who was the shortstop, Representative Marquardt?
Mr. Chair, Zoilo Versailles won the MVP that year, 1965.
Yes, he did. And what was his batting average?
I think it was 276.
I think it was the lowest batting average an MVP ever.
But he had a lot of stolen bases and actually, I think, pretty good home run total for a shortstop that year. Mr. Chair?
No.
I started kindergarten in 1964.
That's hurtful.
Yeah, some of us weren't born in 1964. Yeah. Right.
Representative Hertzog.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to your question, what did it cost in 1970 when I attended the U of M was $12.50 a quarter credit. I just looked up the tuition at the university, and it's $14,142 now. If I divide that by 45 credits, and I don't think they're on the quarter credit, I think they're on semesters now, but if you divide it by the 45 credits, that comes up to $315 a credit. Now, if you adjust, as I did before, inflation, eight times is kind of the number since 1970, that would make $100 a credit. So the cost of attending the university is triple the rate of inflation. over this last 40 years. That's part of the problem.
Now, the Winona State, when I went there, it was $10 a credit in state. Oh, Representative
Babbitt. Mr. Chair, thank you, and Representative Hertas. You're, I'm sure, correct as far as you go. However, you have to live somewhere and you need to eat. And the university total package for 1 year is about $25,000 when you include staying in the dorm, food plan, and so on. And so the students are borrowing for the total expense, which is significantly higher than just the tuition, books, and fees portion of the expense.
Okay, to House File 19, the David Zappelbaum bill as amended, further discussion. Hearing none, all favors say, I move that the David Zappelbaum bill, House File 19 as amended, be laid for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Now, I will move for Representative Chair Hoppe, House File 1249. I will now move the H1249A1 amendment, any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. We now have House File 1249. Folks, please. We now have House File 1249 as amended before us. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? God, I just want to pass this stuff. Okay, let's back up a second. House File 1249 has been delayed for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. I apologize, members. Just to wrap up here, first of all, members, thank you for your work today, number one. Number two, I hope you'll keep in your prayers Governor Dayton, that he has a very strong and rapid recovery. I know that he's in all of our prayers, and we only wish Governor Dayton the best. With that, good government all the time, we're adjourned.